My name is Dario Hasenstab. I'm here with Baldur Hagrids, and we are back with the Western Bubble podcast. Baldur, today we're finally not talking about Donald Trump, Israel, or Iran. The world has been rather quiet on that front, I think, for the past week or so. And I think both of us are a little bit over that topic. At least I feel that I'm drained about it. So we can finally talk about more structural things. And one of our kind of more, well, one of our episodes where we analyze a general problem of the world and we don't have to respond to something that happened on the news last week. Today we're talking about AI.
Yeah, AI, it's something that everyone is talking about, and there's not much we can say about the technical aspects of it. Neither one of us knows much about the workings inside of AI. But what is very clear is that in our work, for me at university, you in your daily work, we see the consequences of AI, right? And we see the problems that it is creating. And in some ways, I'm very much on the side of those who are terrified, simply because of the consequences that it has on our human behavior, which is visible all around the world at the moment. It's not so much about Skynet and the Terminator scenarios. It's very much simply about AI is not good for our mental health and for our social health. It is breaking down the foundations of what make a human society healthy.
Which is why you are an AI boycotter, right? In that sense. So you refuse to use AI. I mean, I assume you still get on Google, you get the Gemini search results. And we've talked about this before. Both of us are annoyed by that.
Well, so that last bit, the search results on Google, it actually made me no longer use Google, even though I still think they're the best in finding the results I'm looking for. But I actively changed because I couldn't stand the fact that every time I typed in something, then I first get a AI answer, which just is not what I want. I want a link to Wikipedia. I want to judge for myself which kinds of websites are going to be useful. And I hated the fact that I had to scroll down past the AI for that. And that you can't turn it off. That's also really annoying, right? That you don't have the choice to say, I don't want AI to give me the answer. Am I an AI boycotter? Well, maybe now I am. I will point out that it didn't happen like that. I must be one of the few people in the world who's never used AI, as in literally never. I've never gone into ChatGPT and actually typed anything into it. I think I went to the website once and it just turned me off, and I don't know. But it grew first in the beginning because I didn't feel any need to. And then I think, rationally speaking, now it would make sense for me to at least spend a month or two just playing around with it to understand how it works, right? How prompts work, how what I can do with it. But now I've got this kind of mental block because I can see that it basically is doing so much harm to people around me. And it's even though rationally it would be right for me to try to understand it, I guess now you could call me a AI antagonist.
Well, that means you're one of very few in the world, because ChatGPT is kind of that website or it's the site where, I mean, if you have to sign up to it, it kind of has the fastest growth in users ever, right? I mean, even beating Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, all of them that we usually associate with that. But the whole world is using ChatGPT or any other form of AI. I mean, there's also so many of them by now. And I use ChatGPT. So I haven't spent enough time properly dissecting which AI. So, right, I mean, so most of them we're using, there are like the language learning models, so LLMs. And I haven't decided yet which one I want to use for what part of my life. So far, I only use ChatGPT. But, I mean, and this is a point of almost disagreement between the two of you, I use ChatGPT regularly for our episode descriptions, right? Where I just copy-paste our kind of episode notes that we take to plan the episode, and I throw it in there, and then I tweak it a little bit left and right, just because it mostly saves me a lot of time. And in the past, I've spent 20 minutes, right, coming up with a witty text, trying to... Right, kind of draw the audience in. But it's 20 minutes of my free time, right, that I'm spending on there. And so the kind of the appeal of AI to quickly to just copy paste it in there, tweak it a little bit. I mean, obviously, I've trained it now for, I would say, about a year. It's really good, at least for the level that I deem adequate to kind of put onto the episode description. Of course, it's nowhere near what you can do
better. Well, just to clarify, when we actually did this little test where I said, I will give you a better title than AI, and you looked it up on AI, and you went with my title in the end. You know, the human brain is still superior in that sense. But I think you just emphasized exactly the issue, right? It is more efficient. But the problem is that the more you use AI for the titles of our episodes, the less you're going to be capable in the future to come up with your own titles, because you're not training yourself to think about good titles, right? So you're taking that away. Now, if your argument is, well, that's fine, because I will never have to do it again, because there will always be AI, right? But now that means that you have a skill less. Some skills become antiquated, you know. I'm not arguing that we should maintain every skill, but something like, what is the title of our podcast episode, is kind of close to home, right? It's close to our heart. It's close to how we communicate to the audience. And to basically outsource that, even it would be the same as giving it to some call center somewhere, you know, and say, could you please give me a good title? It basically takes away that ability for us to do basic yet important tasks that form the foundation of our connection with our audience. Besides titles for the podcast, though, what else do you use it for?
So for me, the main thing is obviously efficiency. So I use it in my work context, right? Where we do events, we invite people for events, and there's a very specific way that my boss wants to have these invitations written, right? We want to avoid very certain words, right? Because in the end, we're a lobbying organization, so we need to make sure that we kind of control the narrative around us. And in the past, I always spent, I don't know, an hour or so kind of writing to, like just writing up the invitation, a title as well for the event, and so on and so forth. And I would submit it to my boss, and then she would change it all, right? And I would basically have a completely different email and whatever text in the end. And then, so I started training AI with her changed texts. And now all what I'm doing is still, of course, coming up with the concept for the event, right? Thinking about who do we want to invite? What's our goal with this, right? So kind of all the thinking in the background I do, which is the most important part to me, is that that's what I'm being paid for ultimately. But kind of turning that into something marketable that will kind of speak to people, right? That's also most importantly for me, the spelling and the grammar is correct, right? Because I always struggle with this. Now AI does, right? So I give it I basically tell it, here, this is my idea for this. Then I ask it, hey, what do you think about this? That's the problem with AI. It usually tells me, oh, good job, amazing. Sometimes it has a few things to improve. And I would say most of the times I reject them, but sometimes there's a really good idea there. And then I just ask it, hey, please write these texts, right? So write the invitation, write the description, come up with like 10 title options, and I will choose one of them. And it's taking away a significant amount of work from me, which allows me in the end kind of to focus on those things that I'm actually good at and I'm being paid for, again, right? Like coming up with cool events, kind of formulating political messages, whatever you want to think about.
Here. But so you're outsourcing those things that you're not good at, which means that you're going to get worse and worse at them because you have less experience with them because AI is doing it for you. You're not understanding the actual reasons why your boss actually has this kind of feedback to you. You're not trying to sort of internalize that kind of thinking for yourself. You're just saying, hey, if I don't do it well, then let AI do it and that's fine. So now there are certain things, I mean, that don't matter, right? Throughout history, certainly over the past 200-300 years, technological progress has meant that there are tasks that we no longer have to do. We don't have to light candles at home because we've got electricity. So, you know, we probably could still light a candle because it's not a particularly difficult skill, but...
I mean, I think let's take it up a little bit. Start your own fire.
Start your own fire, yeah, that kind of thing. I mean, or build basic things, right? I wouldn't be able to build basic things anymore because everything comes neatly packaged from Amazon. So there are loads of skills that we have lost because of technology. Now, that doesn't necessarily have to be a problem, but it does become a problem when it is related, one, to our individual connection with the world, the way that we view the world and the way we understand the world, and two, when it's about basic skills that are required to properly do our job. And that's where I'm getting concerned. So your job is in large part connecting with the outside, and yet an aspect of that connection is now outsourced to AI. So you are gonna train yourself less.
Right, so for me, it's always a trade-off with AI between, okay, how much will this actually save me? First of all, frustration, because writing these email texts is boring. And I know this is our generation taking shortcuts all the time. And again, on the other hand, for me, it allows me to actually connect with people more, because all the time I can spare writing these stupid texts, right, that then will be corrected by my boss anyways. And for some reason, last year, I have not learned how to write like she does. So I fear this says more about me than about AI. But it allows me to kind of connect more with people, right? Because now I have time to, let me individually invite someone to the event that I think would be useful for us. Let me kind of talk to the speaker better. Also, some of my communication becomes simply more efficient, right? So let's say we have an event. I, of course, create a little speaker's briefing. And then I create it and I ask AI, hey, please put this into a nice format, right? Make sure there's no spelling mistakes. And let me know if I forget anything, or do you think there's anything else useful that I should be including there, right? So in that sense, it's helping me, making my communication nicer, better, right? Kind of making sure I don't forget things. And it ultimately allows me to spend more time on the things that I deem important. And again, that's a very, right, that's the trade-off in the end, which I think we're gonna it will ultimately come down a lot to this trade-off in this episode. At what point am I unlearning a skill that might be important to connect with people, right? Or at what point am I allowing myself to connect more with others because I moved out of the way all the worthless tasks in my view, right? My very personal view.
Well, there's a bit of the irony that you say it allows me to connect better to people, where the initial connection, namely the invitation, is actually now AI connecting with people because you're not actually doing the writing. It's not your words, even though it might have your name underneath it, right? But yeah, the whole point here is not so much that we have to maintain all the menial tasks ourselves and that we have to do everything. That's what I just said. Over the past hundreds of years, that has changed already. Efficiency gains in themselves, by themselves, are fine. The problem is that once we say, it's about efficiency gains, hey, it gives me more time to do other things. Well, yeah, as long as the foundations are still real, right? As long as you still actually know what your job is, you actually know what it is that you want to achieve. So, for example, if you were to contact me, we didn't know each other, and you contacted me, and the email is written by AI, that would create already an inherent barrier between us, right? And I think that is the issue. It's not so much that nothing can be done by AI, but this idea of, it's more efficient. So I'm letting AI do this. I let do this. At some point, it's going to create a problem between us.
See, I had an example like this, I think it was a year ago. Right. So I talked to someone from another company, a tech company. So they are obviously very tech savvy and they were on AI very early. And I invited him personally to an event, right, via email. And I received a clear AI answer. It was clear as day, right? Because, also a year ago, so they weren't as good yet. I don't think he trained it very well. I don't think he prompted very well. But it basically said, thank you so much for inviting me to this event. And then gave me the specific title at this time, at this location. I was like, in the personal email, you would never write this. So I basically reconstructed a prompt based on this email saying that, hey, please thank Dario so much for inviting me to this event. Let him know that unfortunately I cannot make it, but that I would be very happy to be invited to an event in the future again. And it took me a few months to figure out whether I liked it or I disliked it, right? Because I thought, So, I mean, what's right? Because what are the scenarios here? So either he doesn't respond to me at all. That kind of makes me feel like, meh, he didn't respond to my personal invitation. The second thing would be, well, he responded, but with only one line because he doesn't have a lot of time. So, hey, thanks so much, but unfortunately can't make it. See you next time. Bye. Or, right, kind of using AI the way he did it. Or, and that's the fourth scenario, and I think that's almost the one I landed on, was he didn't use AI very good, was my first thought. I was like, you're a tech person, you should be using AI better, making me feel, right, kind of writing an email that will resonate with me more. Right, but it was interesting to me, just the observation about myself, that it did take me a few months to figure out whether I liked it or I disliked it. And I think now I'm also at the point where I think if I receive a personal email written by AI, I will get turned off. But that is in line with kind of all the AI slob that has been filling the internet for the last few months. That now bad AI content and badly written LinkedIn posts, for example, that are super generic because they're clearly written by AI with the emojis and with the with the dash and everything. That of course now it completely turns me off. Right now, if I receive something AI written, it of course becomes boring, and it's almost like it's almost the same as right. You never receive letters any longer. And because you only receive emails, and now a letter means a lot more, right? Where maybe in the past, I don't know, that's your generation, not mine, kind of you received maybe 10 letters a day and you thought, oh, I have to answer all of these individually, I don't like it. Now, and then you received an email thinking, oh, wow, an email, fancy. Which now in today's world, it looks a lot more like, oh, I'm receiving 200 emails a day and half of it is spam and some invitations and some newsletters I didn't subscribe to. And oh, wow, this person actually took the time to write an individualized letter to me, right? Pen on paper with a stamp on there that they had to lick, and they actually had to do the effort of go to the postal office, right? So I assume that we're kind of in that stage right now of that process.
Well, but I think that it's actually my generation quite a lot who have always been worried about what emails and internet do to communication, right? So because there was something, and we shouldn't over-romanticize it, but there was something real and valuable about writing letters in the age before the internet, before computers. You had to sit down, you had to take your time, you had to properly think about how to structure your letter. It would be a real personal message. And from the very moment that emails came into existence, people were saying, hang on, this is going to change the way we connect. And I think it's very obvious now in 2025 that our ability to communicate with each other has gone down significantly because we don't think about it anymore. The way to write, even without AI, the way that people write emails is often ugly, it's badly worded, it is just not. And that is something that technology always, AI or not, always has at the core, this danger that it takes the human the human equation out of it, right?
Well, to your credit, this is something that you already said probably a year ago, right? I think that's the first time the two of us talked about AI, where you were concerned, obviously, about the effects it would have on us and kind of compared it to social media, right? That so now for the last 10, 15 years, we've been letting kids run wild on social media, not caring what they do. The result is mental health problems en masse, right? Depression up at incredibly high levels. They can't focus anymore, right? They're not spending time with each other anymore. They're only sitting at home, right? They're lacking social skills. So all of these problems are there. And I think we are now at a point where society as a whole is realizing maybe this was a bad idea, right? And there's different efforts in different places to kind of curb that. So I know in Denmark, they're completely banning phones at schools. There's more and more movements now to kind of go back to the 90s, right? Particularly from that millennial generation of wanting to have a 90s summer where it's about riding your bike to your friend's house to see if they were there, not texting them, hey, do you want to play a video game online? So you have this anti-reaction now towards social media because we now see the damages and the dangers with basically a screw generation. However, when it comes to AI, where you will be able to see very similar patterns, it's that next big shiny object and we seem like we don't care at all, right? Now everyone's jumping onto it and is obviously falling in love with AI.
And the pattern is exactly the same in the sense that at the time, people who criticized it 15, 20 years ago, people who were concerned about social media were called old-fashioned or not understanding new technology. You know, you don't understand what you're talking about because you know nothing about websites, you know nothing about the internet, etc., etc. And now that's exactly the same narrative that's being used with respect to AI, right? Like, hey, you don't understand how AI works. You don't understand. You don't know yet what's going to happen because you're just speculating about the future. Exactly the same kind of responses as to those who criticized social media and the internet 20 years ago. And it just amazes me that how human beings follow those shiny objects, as you call them, like how they go after this without much thought, and then afterwards they notice, hang on, actually this was really big and this has been really bad. It's led to more suicides, it's led to more this, it's led to more that, right? Social media has objectively, demonstrably led to serious mental health issues in our society, and that was not that difficult to understand 15 years ago, and yet we continue doing it, and now here we are. And it's not that difficult to understand the insignificant problems that AI is going to pose, and yet we're doing it, and in 10, 15 years, we're going to all of a sudden observe, hang on, this was bad. And that has nothing to do with whether someone like me understands the technological aspect, the technical side of AI. I don't. I've got no clue about how AI works or LLMs work. It's not my thing. What I know is the impact on human beings, just like we can see the impact on human beings of social media.
Well, I mean, 15 years ago, I think, right, I want to kind of take the heat away from humanity, because 15 years, there were, there was a clear and easy way to kind of predict what would happen, but I don't think there was very conclusive evidence within the early years. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, and we only see it now.
No, but that's, you can't have evidence until it happens. That's the whole point. There was no evidence because social media hadn't done its thing yet. The evidence, and now there is no evidence of AI yet, at least not in large amounts, because it's too early. The point is that good analysis works without evidence, but tries to put little bits of speculation together and then says, hang on, maybe we need to be careful of this. Maybe we need to slow this down. Maybe we need to make sure that there are some safeguards in case this could go wrong, right?
Well, because what I was hinting at is that right now there's the same analysis, but there is already evidence. Because one of the reasons why we're talking about this now is because 3 weeks ago there was the MIT, right, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in the US, published a study on kind of the use of AI while writing essays, which I think is kind of closest to the application of AI that the two of us are experiencing, right? You with your students, me with people at Raya, or also, just like this current generation kind of applying to Raya, wanting to kind of prove that they can learn how to analyze, that they can write, and unfortunately, both of us, I think, are realizing that they can't. And this study explains why, where it basically says that, well, I mean, very clearly, if you have your different groups, right, one of them kind of writing essays just off the top of their head, one of them writing essays using Google, so finding other information, and then the third group was a group using AI, that when it comes to the cognitive skills kind of employed, and also to your brain activity, the group using AI was, of course, far behind all of the other ones. That the group kind of only using their brain power actually showed like the best and highest results. And I think this goes back to the conversation we had just a few minutes ago of, okay, at what point do you want to take convenience or better information versus your brain, right? So, of course, yeah, writing an essay based off the top of your head, you're going to have the best results for your brain activity. However, how good is an essay going to be? If you pair that with Google, however, right? So kind of having to go through information, reading about it, and kind of formulating an argument, creating a structure right? It wasn't far behind the only brain activity, but when it came to the AI group, they sometimes couldn't even quote from their own essays. Right, there was a clear decrease in brain activity. So we already have this evidence now, right? And of course, the study will be replicated and has to be replicated also in different countries, right, to just control for all variables. But we already know that there's evidence that AI is seriously messing with our brains, right? Exactly as you said, right, that I mean, by taking these shortcuts, I'm no longer training myself to write these emails. I'm training myself in maybe different areas, but I'm basically becoming illiterate in writing emails connecting with people.
But and this has been, obviously, it's good to have the MIT study. It's good to have further, you know, proper statistical research into this. However, any professor at university for the past couple of years will have seen this. And it's not, and even without being a professor at university, it should be obvious to anyone why, certainly at an undergraduate level, but I would even argue at a master level and possibly, you know, even beyond there. It should be obvious to anyone that the moment you let AI into the process, then the basic responsibilities of students get outsourced. The basic things that students are there for: how to do your research, how to be able to read, how to be able to read 100 pages. And I'm saying 100 pages because that is already a lot for students these days, right? 100 pages sounds way too intimidating. I know this from my own courses. If I put a 100-page document in there, people say, oh no, that was too long, I didn't have time to read it. So how to read, how to summarize, how to analyze, how to research, how to find information, how to put it all together, how to write it into an essay. Those are the key aspects of academia, certainly in social sciences, but also in hard sciences, by the way. And if you outsource that to AI, there is nothing left for a student to do, certainly not at an undergraduate level. You basically make yourself irrelevant. The university needs to teach these basic tools to students and therefore needs to be incredibly skeptical of AI. Unfortunately, all over the world, universities are struggling with this, and many of them are actually embracing AI because they want to be cool, they want to be modern, they want to deal with it, not understanding the harm they're doing to the very students they're supposed to serve.
Absolutely. And so this is a conversation I had with a professor from my alma mater, from Hertie, just last week, who kind of said the exact same, right? Is I as a professor struggle to convince students not to take the shortcut, because of course it's super convenient. Particularly if you are, right, I mean, we've all been in the situation, I hope you too, Balder, otherwise I would be concerned about your student years, that you kind of you pushed off writing a paper till the very end, and now you have like 12 hours, maybe 6 hours left to do it, which, I mean, I can write good essays in 6 hours, but maybe you've pushed it even further, and now you only have 2 hours left. Oh, what do I do? Okay, let me quickly go to like ChatGPT and help me with it, right? But how do you convince students of the fact that all these different and very important steps you mentioned earlier are so essential to your formation as a student and as an academic, and hopefully maybe one day as a scientist?
Indeed, and to answer your question, of course I've been there. And that's also, by the way, part of the student experience, that you are working at 4 o'clock at night because at 8 o'clock in the morning there's a deadline, and you're looking at the clock and you're getting tired, but you know you have to put something onto paper. You submit something that is not great. Well, that is also an interesting learning experience, right? That's part of the process. With AI, none of this becomes, you know, maintains any value, because with AI, everything can just be done within very short periods of time. But a lot of the attention for this kind of conversation is being paid to the actual writing process. However, I would argue that the reading and summarizing and thinking process is probably even more important than the writing, right? I mean, it's important for people in general, students certainly, to be able to write a good essay. The style, the, you know, spelling. You mentioned spelling before in your own work. This has been an issue with since Grammarly and spell checks in the late 90s became a thing. You know, the moment you rely on a spell check, then that's the moment that you're not thinking for yourself anymore, and you're not training to spell properly. All of those things are relevant, but the most important thing for your students, as well as for society at large, is to properly be able to take a text, to understand information, to go through information, to get the most important variables out of that information and put them together into proper analysis. And that process of being able in your head to summarize the key elements of a long text, in your head to be able to properly understand paragraphs that are difficult to read, that are maybe very dense, all of that is key to the experience of undergraduate students, and I would argue key to human intellect, to human intellectual progress. And most of people, including the professor you mentioned, I don't know who you're talking about, of course, I don't know the person, but I would argue that most people do not have the discipline to actually say, oh, you know what, I'm only going to use it for my reference list. I'm only going to use it to make my document look good. No, very quickly, they're going to move into the area of, let me just quickly summarize this text because I don't have time to read it. Let me quickly ask AI what the facts are about this specific issue. And as a result, even the professionals, even those who have gone through university and are now doing it themselves, are going to be prone to AI dependence and therefore no longer training themselves to do the core job that they're supposed to do.
That was also part of the conversation we had. And we kind of came to the conclusion that so if you are a seasoned professional using AI, there's of course a significant efficiency boost, but you're also able to call AI out on its BS, right? Because it still isn't perfect. I mean, and I'm not sure whether it ever will be, because in the past, right, of course, AI had a, particularly ChatGPT, had a tendency to lie. I mean, it's always improving and it's always getting better. But the problem is it's also incredibly like basic, right? So a professor or an expert on a topic will be able to kind of know what is important and what not. But a student who has no expertise on the topic, right, for them it's even more difficult. And kind of this all goes against the argument of this, right, that AI will help with the democratization of knowledge, right? Is that now everyone has access to all the wisdoms of this world, so we're going to see this huge boost in innovation, which, I mean, I'm convinced we will see, but we will see this boost of innovation by experts, but we will not see this boost of innovation by an 18-year-old child who decided that reading Fukuyama at the end of history was too much work, and that I, like, hey, AI, summarize it to me in one paragraph so I can kind of answer the first question in class and kind of get through with it. And now I know that Fukuyama called for the end of history or something.
Yeah, that is clear, right? It's the problem for that 18-year-old is much more obvious to see. But I would argue that even for that expert, we are underestimating the issue here. Yes, there is still legacy thinking because AI has, well, practically, I mean, it's been around for longer, but that it has any real significant impact has only been a few years, that people are actually using it in their analysis, in their job, in their research. So most experts now still have sufficient knowledge built up in their head by themselves without being dependent on AI. And they can therefore, as you say, call out the BS from AI right now. Now, the problem is that slowly over time, those experts are going to become less knowledgeable because slowly over time, they're going to depend more on AI. And you know who's going to get better at it? AI. AI is going to get better at analysis. And so what that leads to, at some point, we won't have the capability as analysts anymore to understand whether AI is actually speaking the truth or not. On top of that, here is the classic logical problem in what you just said. Hey, we can call out BS. Well, if I see that AI makes a mistake, I will say AI has made a mistake. That is BS. Okay, cool. However, how do I know that I'm always aware of the BS? Because sometimes I might just, my expertise might not be good enough. And AI might tell me something right now that is actually wrong, but I assume it to be true. For example, let's say that I do some work for the government in South Sudan. I haven't worked in South Sudan for quite a while, and AI were to tell me these are the key politicians that are currently working in this field in South Sudan. I would not be able to now properly evaluate that. So I would just assume that to be true. I go with that, and that could lead me down a very dark alley, right? So yes, the problem is much more obvious and much more concerning because it's about a very basic skill set for undergraduate students, for young people. But I would not take the problem away relating to the experts. Experts are not that capable of resisting AI.
Because this leads us to the societal level. We also don't know who is feeding AI with what information, right? And I mean, the most popular example here, I think, is Elon Musk's, right? A good friend of the Western bubble. Elon Musk's AI Gog, which basically recurringly has huge problems kind of citing correct facts, particularly if accidentally in the middle of the night someone inserted some code they weren't supposed to insert, and suddenly Grok starts fantasizing about white genocide in South Africa, a topic that Elon Musk deeply cares about, right, which is has been debunked thoroughly. So we don't know who controls it, and it obviously makes it a lot easier for governments or just bad actors to do bad things with it. As you said at the beginning, it's not about AI potentially turning evil. It's more about what will evil people do with AI.
And so exactly those evil people, because the question of Skynet is a technical question. I have no idea, you know, I don't know if anyone does, but I have no idea whether AI will become self-conscious or will all of a sudden hit the genocidal button because somehow they think that's the right thing to do. Those are technical questions. But on the one hand, having this society, this population that is losing its cognitive abilities, its abilities to understand complexity, its abilities to properly analyze by themselves reality, and on the other hand, these tools available to the Elon Musks or to governments in this world that can actually manipulate our brain functions, our thinking, our understanding of the world. Now, so on the one hand, society is becoming less critically minded, we become less critical thinkers and more dependent on information being fed to us. And you've got authorities who can tweak things and change little things. And that is the moment when we really, really need to become scared of like a 1984 scenario where essentially everything that we built up over the past couple of hundred years, a critical middle class holding power to account, is eroding. And not just economically, but also in this case, cognitively, in terms of intellect, in terms of abilities.
And to add to this, right, it's not only about us kind of holding governments to account, but it becomes a lot easier. For governments to know more things about us. So to either know about our search history, right? What do we talk to AI about? Tax evasion, for an example. Or do we simply talk about the weather or how to cook something, right? Or, hey, AI, how do I overthrow a government that is using AI to be evil on me, right? So, I mean, it could be those things, right? So privacy is a huge concern.
Yeah, often I've heard in the past people say things such as, yeah, but hold on, AI can only use everything that's out there already. Possibly, I don't know. It's not crazy for me to think of a scenario where AI can actually access information that shouldn't be publicly available. But okay, let's assume that AI only uses public information. Even then, the fact that AI can very quickly shift through that information and very quickly come up with the answers that some authority or some kind of hacker wants to have access to, is, of course, a huge problem with privacy. You know, if scattered information of you is all around the internet, that's not too bad. But if all of a sudden AI can unscatter that, can put that all together into a clear profile, that becomes incredibly scary. And then when it comes to authorities using that against us, two things that should be remembered here. First of all, authorities in 2025 are more and more becoming a weird mixture between capital and politics, right? Governments are much less safeguarded against the influence of capital, finance, multinationals, billionaires than before, right? So already it's becoming this very scary kind of governance system that now has access to all this technology, where the politicians are no longer responsive to the voters, no longer responsive to society, but responsive to those elites at the top. That is one very scary thing. And the other scary thing is that you should not want to live in a society where the authorities, even a democratic liberal society where everything works well, where the police, where government departments have all the information about you. I've always found it comforting in the 20th century that a criminal could hide in the woods, could hide in the forest and not be found by the police. Not because I like that criminal or not because I want that criminal to be caught. Not to be caught, of course I do. Of course a criminal needs to go to to jail or whatever it is that they've done. But the fact that a criminal could hide in the forest meant that there were limits to the power of the authorities, that there were limits to the power of government. And now we're moving to a world where that power is limitless, right? Where everyone can be found, where everything can be found out about you, where someone just has to hit a button and they can basically get all the dirt on your life. And then when you say, well, I don't have any dirt, that argument has been debunked so often. It's not about whether you're a criminal or not. It's about to what extent people can manipulate the information against you. And that is an incredibly, incredibly scary scenario.
This seems like a great end, like a great moment to end our today's conversation on AI. If you have any questions, comments, or you heard a mistake that we've made throughout the episode, please make sure to send us an email to thewesternbubble@gmail.com, and we will try to incorporate them in our following episodes. Thank you very much to the listeners for joining us today. Make sure to join us again next week when we burst the Western Bubble. That is it from my side. Balder, which closing quote did you pick for us today?
I mentioned 1984 by George Orwell before, and I very much encourage anyone who hasn't read 1984 to read it, or let ChatGPT summarize it or something like that, because it's such an important book, especially in this day and age, right? Even though it was written in 1948. This quote, and I could take 1,000 from the book, but this quote goes as follows. Who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past.